Now, get ready for the hottest talk show of the year, Crime Time Live, with your host, renowned attorney Scott Weinberg. Brought to you live by Clear Channel Radio and syndicated nationally on TalkZone.com. Discuss all the sizzling hot cases making headline news today and how you can protect your rights. And now, here's your host, Scott Weinberg.
Good morning, America. Beautiful morning out there. A little chilly, a little cold, a little sunshine coming through. We're going to shine all over your rights. Can Facebook get you caught if you want it by the law? You betcha. We'll talk about a story about the police caught gang members because of Facebook. Can you believe that? Facebook gets you caught? And how about BB guns? Do they ever go with kids in school? Is that ever a good thing to take your BB gun to school? We'll listen later for a story about a woman accused of supplying her kid with weapons at school. Did you hear me? With weapons at school. That's just insane. Plus, a discussion today, we're going to get to sexual harassment. What is going on with sexual harassment at work? When is it permissible? Is it ever permissible? And what is our new Supreme Court in the great state of Michigan going to do about it? Do we have to worry about it? Do we have to get involved? Well, we'll be talking about that here on Crime Time Live. Plus, if we have time, we'll talk about the new super drunk driving laws that came into effect last week. Calls and questions and your concerns. You call us at 248-848-1310. This is Scott Weinberg on Crime Time Live. You stay tuned. We got a big show.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Have you or a loved one been arrested or charged with a crime? Do you want to stay out of jail and keep your record clean? Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live, heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1, or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL and the number one right now.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, cops using Facebook. Now we see it. Now we know why we always tell our kids, you be careful about what you're putting up there. Now we can say it to anybody accused of a crime. Cops using Facebook to snag Pontiac gangs. 5 alleged gang members arrested in a major bust in Pontiac that netted 74 arrests this week are scheduled to be arraigned in federal court in Detroit. The suspects were snared in a drug trafficking investigation by federal and local authorities. I'm telling you, you got to be careful about everything that you put up on any social media, including Facebook, especially if you're wanted by the police. They spent the last 11 months trying to dismantle a gang crime in Pontiac. 11 months they've been looking for these people. And you know how they found them? They said that 74 of the arrestees were in their teens and their 20s, and they belonged to Almighty Latin King Nation, or a New World Order gangs. They said that 32 of the suspects were picked up on Thursday, but it wasn't so tricky. You know, they found some of them. That's right. They had information about themselves on Facebook and MySpace. So that's what the police are doing now. Oh, you want to hide? You want to be careful about what you're doing? Well, don't put things on Facebook. I mean, you got to be crazy. You know, we tell our kids all the time, you be careful what you put on Facebook. You know, future employers, your teachers, definitely your family, are always going to be able to see what's on Facebook. They're going to be able to see what you're posting. That's for the world. The world can see it. And now you've got, obviously, stupid criminals. Right? You've got stupid criminals that are hiding from the police. And what do? They start talking to their buddies and posting things on Facebook and MySpace. And they're going to get caught just like this. That is what the new way, the new wave of police investigation is. Wait for the criminal to screw up by trying to contact his friends on Facebook, and boom, they're going to nab him. You think police should be doing that? Do you think that it's some type of search and seizure issue? If you put it out there where you are and what your contact information is, and someone who you didn't intend to know that, now they're going to be able to find you because of your display of information on any social media. Do you think that's right? You call me at 248-848-1310. And you let me know whether or not you think police are going too far, whether or not the government is going too far in looking at our personal information that we put out there online, most likely just for our friends, right? For our family. We didn't want the government to look at it, but you post it out there. Oh, believe you me, that is exactly what's going on. They are going to be looking at it. Do you think that's right? Do you think that's what they should be doing? You call me at 248-848-1310, and you let me know whether or not you think that is exactly what, I guess, is the future of this social media. Is that the future? That is a law investigation, a police investigation technique that they should be using? Because it's there, I'm telling you right now. And it's been there for a little while. Definitely the feds use it, but now all the local police are using it. They are. They're taking the time to go through everybody that they want to discover. It used to be phone records, right? It used to be they look through, they get a search warrant to be able to go through and see what's in your department, or you didn't even need a search warrant, just go into your trash. Now you're throwing all your information away. You know where you're putting it? Oh, you better be right. You're putting it on Facebook, and somehow you think that's private? You better think again, my friend, because that is public information number one. That is absolutely out there. That's available for the public. George and Canton, what do you got to say about that? Should the police be able to go and look at our Facebook, look at our social media, look at our private information like that we put out to the public so they can use against us?
I'm not comfortable with it, but I know things happen. My question is there any liability factor? How does Facebook stand up to their claims that the only people that can see this is your group of friends when no, that's not true? Is there a liability for Facebook on that?
Well, that is a great question because you know what Facebook says, right? Oh, we have the encrypted information. Nobody can see your stuff unless you've actually listed them
right
as your friend, right? Or if you
right.
like it and so it gets sent. And that is a great question. You know what? And I don't have that answer, but I'm going to find out for you. Because
okay.
I tell you something, what they can do is they can try to get search warrants. They can try to get into the information. But if Facebook doesn't allow it, right, under a federal subpoena, if they don't allow them to share that information, how are the police getting it? How are they being able to see who your friends are? You should be able to block that.
It's similar to journalists saying, no, my sources are confidential. I'm not going to reveal them.
That's exactly right. I mean, I guess there's a difference if you think about it. I mean, let's put it in the terms of this isn't your buddy trying to find information on your other buddy, right?
Right.
This
right.
is the government trying to find out private information on you,
mm-hmm.
but they're doing it in a way that they're using what you've already put out there.
Mm-hmm.
So is that different than, for instance, if they come into your house and they look into your computer and they don't have a search warrant, clearly someone would say, hey, I know the guy did something wrong. He might have warrants, but that is definitely protected by our privacy rights under the Constitution. But when you put it out there on Facebook or you put it in the net somewhere, does it now become public domain? Is it now out there for everybody to see, even if you expected that site like Facebook to keep it private?
Facebook has a question to answer there, don't they?
That's exactly right. You stay tuned, and we'll try to find out that answer. You want to call it 248-848-1310. Because I really think that is a legitimate concern that everybody should have. They should have a concern about everything they put out on these sites that you think, yo, you have a password, it's private, no one's going to find out. And all of a sudden, you find out that the IRS found out all your information. Or that the feds who are looking for you have all this information. Oh, you can sue them, but believe me, they still got you. Right? They still have that information. Ken, what do you think? Do you think everybody thinks should be private out there if you put it online? Ken, can you hear me? Ken, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, Ken. What do you think? Should it all be private, or once we put it out there, is it for public display?
Well, I have a question first. Did the police or the investigators, you need to, you know, get around the passwords to get this access, or was it just stuff that, say, if I went on the Facebook, I would be able to see it?
Yeah, we don't know what happened.
If it's something electronic to jump around these people's passwords, I would say that would be a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But if it was just public access that anybody could see, I don't see how it could be illegal, or, I mean, it's just dumbness on the part of the people putting that info out there when they're breaking the law.
You know, it does depend on how you list it. I mean, let's say that you have that expectation of privacy, right? I mean, you can say that you put information on you, whether it's your credit card number, whether it's your Social Security number, whether it's where you lived, any information on you. And you have an expectation of privacy from a site who's saying this information will be kept private. I think there is an excellent, excellent argument that any violation of that is a violation of your Fourth Amendment, is a violation of your constitutional right against that search and seizure. I mean, I really think that is that's an expectation of privacy. No different than if we had our money in a bank. I mean, they shouldn't be able to get that without a federal subpoena, without going to a magistrate, without being able to say, hey, we're overturning his right of privacy, of keeping things private that he has an expectation of because of X, because of Y, and have a judge sign off on that. That is something that should happen before someone goes into our private arena.
Well, I agree with that portion of it, but see, I'm not really familiar with Facebook, but isn't there like portions of Facebook where you put like your blogs out there and stuff that anybody can read? And then there are stuff like your address and stuff that you can like keep secret.
Yeah,
if you want. Isn't that kind of how it works?
Yeah, I mean, I've got Facebook, and when you're on Facebook, you click on your preferences, right?
Right.
I want to only share information with my friends. I only want to share.
Okay.
Have my friends see this.
The cops got around that somehow. They got into a portion they weren't supposed to see without the permission of the user. Then I say they violated a person's rights. But if they put it out there like you say in your blog or your thing on Facebook where it's public information for people that you want to see, I don't see how that would be. I mean, if they're a Facebook user, wouldn't they be entitled to use that anyway?
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that Ken definitely has a point. If you have that expectation of privacy, you click onto a site and you go in there and they specifically say, you can keep this information private. You click here and we won't share it. You need some judge to come in there and sign that away, or you definitely should have a right against that company for sharing information. But if you go into some kind of public blog and you give up your information, don't be surprised that the police are going to use it against you. You're the one that has to make sure that you went to a site that's supposed to be private and that you only put information that you want to be private. You know, listen, let me tell you something. The people that put all the information in about their kids, about where they live, about their social security numbers, I don't care what that site says. You run the risk that they're going to give up that information. They'll share it with a third party too. Well, I know they say they won't, but are you willing to bet everything on that? You call me at 248-848-1310 and you tell me whether or not you feel all those sites should be like that. They should be held responsible if they share that stuff. Because I'm telling you right now, you don't have that control. Oh, you think you do because you make a click and maybe there might be some legal action that you can take if they share it. In the meantime, everybody's got it. The whole world has your information. You think twice. You think twice before you give any of that information online. You got to think twice. You got to be more careful about it. Because I don't care who it is. I don't care what site it is. If they give it up, you have limited rights to get it back. You have very limited control to ever give it back. And it's out there for the world. David, what do you got to say about that? Do you think we should be able to control that better? Do you think the government should have rights on that?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, David, what do you think? Do you think the government has any rights to our public information that we try to keep private on something like Facebook?
Well, my experience, I'm a retired parole officer, and I've dealt with the criminal justice system over the years. If there's a way of getting around something, they will do it.
Oh, you betcha.
I guess the question is, and I don't want to give too much credit to these gang guys because they're not probably the brightest people in the world. They probably put stuff out there public just bragging about it because that's the nature of the way they are.
And that's what I think really happened. I think it's different than it really seems like it's reported in the media. I bet you they did not go with federal subpoenas. I bet these gang guys just simply stuck information up out there that wasn't private and, you know, just on some type of blog and gave up their own information because I bet they were stupid about that.
I guess what we have to be concerned, though, is are the laws keeping up with the technology? I'm not sure it is. And is anybody going to do anything about it? Who knows?
Well, I can tell you right now, the laws have not kept up with technology. And you know why? Because it's changing so fast. I mean, our technology is changing months at a time. Well, laws take years at a time.
I mean, you worked in the system.
How easy is it to work in the parole system? How does that change? How long does it take to change something in a parole system?
Well, it's very slow. And, you know, what the problem we had in parole was is, unfortunately, it got to the point where we had to have lawyers writing policy because nobody could figure out anything what was really happening just to try to keep up with all the changes. It got really complicated. That's why I retired.
Well, happy retirement, but let me tell you something. It is a difficult process if you want to be quick about changing some laws and you're working within the system because I'm telling you right now, it is a very, very slow turning of the wheel. The way that laws are written, you don't want to see two things, right? You don't want to see the way laws are written because it's just like making sausages, my friend. You never know what's in there. And it's an ugly process, and it takes a long time. But technology, oh my goodness. When's the last iPod we had? When's the last time they changed the way that we work with Facebook? I mean, they change every month, every couple months. You expect laws to change that quick? There's no way that the laws can keep up with technology. So you take it from me. You be very, very careful what you put out on any social media. Did you hear about that mother who sent her son to school with a BB gun and with a knife? Unbelievable. Claiming that her son was being bullied at school, this woman admitted to the police that she placed a BB gun Think about this. She placed a BB gun and a folding knife into her 12-year-old's backpack before he left for class. Hi, honey. Here's your bologna sandwich and your gun. Sylvia Moyica, 38, told the police department the cops that her child had been getting harassed and threatened on a daily basis for at least 2 weeks. So there you go. You go arm your kid, not with, you know, abilities to be able to negotiate with these kids, not with information, not with the desire to go to the counselor, to the principal, or to the teacher. Don't even teach him self-defense. Go give him a gun and a knife. Go defend yourself. It's at the elementary school, according to the police report. She added that she had registered several complaints with the faculty, but nothing happened. Well, at least she took the time to go register the complaints, but then you don't arm your kid. The school administrators and the police learned of the weapons in the boy's backpack after he was involved with the confrontation, of course, with a group of kids, another gang, right? Elementary school gangs. The child admitted that his mom had encouraged him to bring the BB gun and the knife to school. Yeah, but listen, what if we're just getting this from the kid? What if the mom denies it, right? So now the kid might have been doing it, and it wasn't even the mom giving it. The boy said he had not used the weapons, and he turned the items over. I don't know. I mean, I'd say that if you got a woman who's admitting it, obviously it's got to be the most stupid mom in the entire city who's arming the kid to go to school like that. But if you have it where it's just the kid saying it, my mom gave it to me, then you got to question it, right? Then you got to say, come on, what mom is going to be really that stupid? I don't know. Maybe you know a mom that's that stupid. You call me at 248-848-1310, and you tell me whether it's ever okay that you give your kid a weapon. I don't care if it's a shoe to beat over the head of a bully. Is it ever okay to arm your kid to go to school, even if he's being bullied? I mean, if he's being bullied, let's face it, you know, you want to do something about it. You don't want your kid to get into a fight. You don't want him to start beating people up, but you sure as heck don't want to give him a weapon. You don't want to give him multiple weapons. I don't care if it is a BB gun. You got to be careful how you treat your kids in terms of what you tell them to do on a third-party situation. You got a kid who's being bullied. What do? Do you send him to school with information on going to the principal? Do you teach him how to fight back? Do you call the kid's mom who's bullying him? Or do you give him a weapon to go threaten the bully? I don't know, but I can't believe that the last is the best option. You call me at 248-848-1310. Well, we had been following the slain executive, you know, out of Community Central Bank. And, of course, he was the one that was missing for a period of time. They didn't know what happened. And then they found him decomposing in the lake a couple weeks ago. Didn't know what happened. First autopsy showed nothing, really. Then the second autopsy showed a bullet hole in his head. And they're still wondering what happened. They're still trying to figure out, is it a homicide? That they haven't ruled out suicide? What is going on? An autopsy of Macomb County Medical Examiner Daniel Spitz found no blunt force trauma. He didn't declare it a murder. But then a second independent autopsy, which the family themselves had to go pay for, was performed by the Oakland County Medical Examiner. And he, of course, found a gunshot wound. How do you miss that? He found a gunshot wound to the back of the neck of the executive. Then, of course, they found a .38 caliber handgun in the lake. They don't even know if the gun is the one that was involved in the shooting. But they're analyzing it. They're still deciding whether or not it's a homicide or a suicide. Well, how long should it take? And a bank is involved in trying to protect their reputation. Come on. You've got to have a quicker, more succinct investigation before you ever came out with the first recommendation by the medical examiner. No blunt force trauma. Oh, yeah, well, but we didn't catch that gunshot wound to the back of the head. Give me a break. You want to call and talk about that, 248-848-1310. After the break, you know what we're going to get to? We're going to get to one of the it's one of the most important things that go on in the workplace. We're going to get to sexual harassment. Have you been sexually harassed at work? Do you know other compadres at work that are being harassed by other people at work? Have people been groped, not just verbally molested, but physically harassed and molested at work, and nobody does anything about it? And what are the rules? What are the laws that are in the state of Michigan with this old Supreme Court and now the new Supreme Court that can protect your rights? We're going to get to that after the break because I'm telling you, it happens every single day at work. Whether you're a man or a woman, there is sexual harassment at work, and you have a right to know what you can do to protect yourself. You stay tuned. You call me and you let me know what you think about that. 248-848-1310. Scott Weinberg on Crime Time Live. We'll be right back.
Sergeant Matthew Kyle was on his second tour in Iraq when injured.
I was shot in the neck by an Iraqi sniper on combat patrols.
As a quadriplegic, Sergeant Kyle will require specialized medical care and benefits for the rest of his life. That's where Paralyzed Veterans of America can help. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
A National Service Officer exists solely to help veterans get their benefits. We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that that veteran's entitled to.
Matthew's wife, Tracy Kyle.
We don't have the knowledge to go through this by ourselves. And these benefits are going to take you through the rest of your life.
If you don't ask for a benefit, the VA can't give it to you. The veteran doesn't know what to ask for.
We could not have done this journey without the Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Paralyzed Veterans is an independent, not-for-profit organization founded by vets for vets.
To help, visit pva.org.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Ellen.
One night, I was at a bar.
I had one too many drinks.
I got behind the wheel.
I got a cab.
A squirrel ran across the road. I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I hit a guy.
The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Have you or a loved one been arrested or charged with a crime? Stay out of jail and keep your record clean. Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live. Heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL and the number one right now.
Getting to your rights. That's what we're doing here every week. Protecting your rights from not just the government, but also from your boss, and actually from your coworkers too. You know, it came recently back in the news about sexual harassment, talking about Clarence Thomas' wife, where she allegedly called Anita Hill for an apology. We all remember that, right? Back in the early 90s, nearly 20 years ago, after Anita Hill accused Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment during that contentious Supreme Court confirmation hearing. Just a couple weeks ago, Clarence Thomas's wife supposedly called Anita Hill asking for an apology. You know, that brought up all the ugliness of sexual harassment again. But it happens every day at work. It just doesn't get in the news. Why is that? Something that happens every single day at work. Every day, whether you're a government employee, whether you're working for a private company, every single day we see bosses, managers, some slimy coworker who's groping or harassing another coworker, and you know what? We don't do anything about it. We don't say anything about it. Never makes the papers anymore. But then it rears its ugly head back in the paper, back in the media, because a Supreme Court judge's wife supposedly calls Anita Hill, a case from 20 years ago, and it brings up the whole thing again. Why do we need one of the most famous harassment cases to come back up for us to start talking about it again? Why can't we bring it up? Why doesn't the media cover it when it's a local case, when it's not a famous person? Well, we're going to talk about it today because it happens all the time. It happens in our workplace, and we have to know what our rights are, especially now that we've got, believe you me, a very conservative Supreme Court, where we got our favorite friend, Greg Young, one of the best attorneys in town. We got him on the phone now, and we're going to talk about what can we do to protect ourselves at work. Greg, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good. So what is going on at work now? Is it just not reported, but it's going on? Or is it that the studies show that it's not even going on at work? Because I think it goes on all the time. It's just people are too afraid to come forward.
Well, Scott, it is going on all the time. And strangely enough, it is reported. The problem, at least in Michigan, is that even when it's reported, the law favors the employer in an employment situation.
Why? Why is that? Is there a history to that? Why aren't they on our side?
Well, I'll tell you why. A couple years ago, there was a Michigan Supreme Court decision. Justice Markman and, unfortunately, the newly reelected Justice Young, no relation to myself, I assure you, issued a decision in a case where a security guard, a female security guard, worked at a steel plant, and her supervisor, this case is so sad, it's unbelievable. Her supervisor, over the course of months and months, was relentless and would say directly to her, "I want to F you, and I want to pull your long, dark hair." She had real long hair. He continued to do this. She was so afraid, when she saw him coming, she would lock herself in the security shack. She reported it to coworkers. She reported it to her supervisor's boss, the vice president of the steel company. Nothing was done about this. He continued to say it more than once. "I want to F you and pull your long, dark hair." Well, one night, she's making her rounds. She's alone in the plant. This guy sees her, the supervisor, pushes her into a female bathroom and rapes her. He's convicted. A suit was brought on her behalf against the employer because, look, she told the employer, Scott, she told the employer repeatedly, "This guy is saying these things to me. I'm uncomfortable. I have to hide." The employer did nothing. The trial court dismissed the case. The Michigan Court of Appeals reinstated it and said there was plenty of facts here for a jury to decide. And that's the key, whether there's enough facts that a jury could hear the issue as to whether the employer should have taken some steps. Maybe the jury would decide the employer didn't have enough notice. Maybe a jury would decide that the employer, it just was not concrete enough of a threat. But at least it should have been a jury's decision.
But there really are two things there, right? You've got one time where there's the civil issue of, is there harassment? And then don't you have the criminal act? I mean, let's face it, there's a rape going on at work. That's a separate thing, isn't it, from the sexual harassment?
Absolutely. But rape is obviously an extreme sexual harassment. But you're right. There's two things going on here. One, the criminal, and the criminal justice system prevailed. The man was convicted. But the employer should have done something, to just move the guy or move her, should have acknowledged the problem in some way. And what happened is the Michigan Supreme Court ruled as a matter of law, Scott, that there were not enough facts here to allow a jury to decide whether the employer acted improperly. If you can believe this.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, this is the Supreme Court's words, and in particular Justice Markman and Young agreed with it, that this speech, that I want to, I'm using the nice word, F you, pull your hair, things like that, that's just modern workday speech. Can you believe that?
Not in my work.
Not in any rational person's word. Not in anybody who has a heart's words. They said it's, and I'm quoting, modern workday speech, it may, underline may, be boorish and undesirable. Can you imagine it?
Well, that's crazy. You want to join the conversation, you call us at 248-848-1310. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, how could they say that even though it's just, they're depicting it just being boorish or rude, they're making that choice. They're saying, okay, certain type of words can be used and certain type of words and intonations in your in the way you say it can't be. I mean, isn't that what they're saying?
Exactly right. But what they're really saying is that the citizens of Michigan don't have a right to have a jury of their peers decide it. They said that this, quote, modern workday speech, unquote, as a matter of law, is not basically actionable. Can you imagine, Scott? It really, what it is, quite honestly, it is prejudice. It's unfortunate, but when you really get down to basics, it's because it's sexual harassment and not something else. Let me give you an example. What if the same guy had said repeatedly over the course of months, I want to blow up this building and hurt people?
Right. You know, that's going to get stopped.
Yeah. What if, look what happens in schools when, a goofy 17-year-old kid, just is venting and says, I'm going to trash this place and blow it up.
Right. Everything shuts down for 2 days.
Shuts down. The kid's arrested. He's in psychiatrist for the next 10 years. I mean, it's dealt with, okay, maybe even to the extreme. But if it involves a woman and the guy's telling her, basically, I'm going to rape you and pull your hair, and then goes out and does it, it's not actionable in Michigan because they say it's not foreseeable. That's their words. They say it's not foreseeable that a person might act this out.
We're talking to Greg Young, one of the top attorneys in town. You want to ask him any questions, you call it 248-848-1310. Well, that's nuts. I mean, that gets back to, you can be a woman's rights advocate and you can say, you know what, that's just basic prejudice against protecting women. I mean, protecting their rights. It goes back to what the policy was of why you would allow sexual harassment in the first place, suits against it, trying to help women break through that ceiling of discrimination, of trying to keep them down. It seems like it's still going on.
I can't think of any other rational reason they would do that other than, unfortunately, a bias against a woman. In other words, it's still okay for the guys to say, to be locker room talk. Then you know what? That's probably true. But this guy did it for months to the point where she was hiding. I mean, there is a difference. And the real point being is they've taken the ability of the Michigan citizens to decide the issue, and they know more than anybody else. And that's what's sad. They claim they're the strict constructionists of the Constitution. They want to just interpret the Constitution. Well, the Constitution says you get a right to a jury trial, but they, that doesn't count when it comes to these type of things, particularly with women.
We've got a new, we've just had an election, so I don't want to let you go without getting your opinion on this. I know you've been in front of the Michigan Supreme Court, because I know you're one of the top attorneys. You end up doing that. Tell us about the Supreme Court. What do we have to be concerned now with this new Supreme Court?
Well, just even setting aside one's politics, it really doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative. All of those groups, when you ask people one-on-one, would be outraged in this type of situation that they couldn't have a say on a jury as to whether something happened. And what's happened with our court, it has switched, I call it the right, but to the extreme right again. Justice Young was reelected. Justice Davis, who was appointed by Granholm just to fill the seats of Justice Weaver for a couple months, was kicked off, and Justice Kelly was put in his place. So it's reconsolidated. The majority of the Michigan Supreme Court is now back to where it was. quite some time ago. And it's not going to bode well. People think, oh, it's good for insurance companies. You know, we don't want courts being activists. Well, this conservative court, it was and will be again extremely activist. I mean, think what they just did in this case. They said, hey, Michigan citizens, you don't have a right to have your case heard before a jury. We decide as a matter of law what it's going to be in this type of situation. So, you know, even if you're conservative, that should raise your eyebrows.
But people always think that, you know, listen, you have a conservative court, and there's so much litigation that goes on in a state, not just Michigan, but every state in the union. And if you have a conservative court, they're going to somehow limit the use of the courts. They're going to limit litigation. I mean, for instance, let's say for auto accidents. If they're more for a conservative court, more for an insurance type of outcome, where they're making it harder for an individual to sue. Doesn't that stop more litigation? Would people be right when they're saying a conservative court has less litigation?
Well, you know, in theory, it may lessen litigation. But one thing is that the reason we have courts and the reason we have juries in particular is to give citizens a venue to have their grievances heard. And it's an amazing system. You know, people, you know, no matter how hot they are, no matter how upset they are, they submit their claim or their grievance or their problem to a jury of men and women. And then abide by what those men and women say. When you take that away, if you limit that, you're going to have, I truly predict this, and it's shown in other societies, more violence, more horrible things happening because there's no outlet to have your grievances heard. So, I mean, it's one of the very touchstones of America, this jury system, and it's one of the best in the world. Sure, it's got faults, but think about it. You know, we as civilized people go before a jury and accept their decision. You take that right away, you're having, you know, some men and women sitting in robes up in Lansing deciding your case without ever even seeing your face. I think it raises problems, Scott.
I agree, and I think that, just like I tell my son, it's not the perfect system, but it's the best one we've got. Greg Young, thanks for joining us. You want to talk to Greg, you call him anytime at 248-855-1500, and he will answer any of those questions. Thanks for joining us on the show, Greg.
You have a good day, Scott.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the new revelation of drunk driving laws. You are not going to believe what's going on. As of just last Monday, Michigan's super drunk driving laws are coming into effect. You better watch out. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy. You feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad, and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf. Call Jim, Lad, and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YAR-YAR.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Have you or a loved one been arrested or charged with a crime? Do you want to stay out of jail and keep your record clean? Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live, heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL and the number one right now.
Welcome back to the show. To get to all the new drunk driving laws, but you know, there's something I read in the paper. You gotta hear this. You know, the woman freed in husband's death cannot visit her son. Did you read about this? You know, about the attorney who was found dead. A judge this morning ordered that Laura Johnson, the Farmington Hills woman, once accused of murdering her husband, do you remember that? Rush to judgment, go arrest the wife. Go arrest the spouse. And of course, it turned out there was something else going on. That she was banned from seeing her two sons. The ruling came after the children's attorney said such visits would cause great harm to the children. This is what they say. I believe it would be psychologically dangerous for there to be any contact with the children. The children have great fear. They should have no contact with them. Of course, the prosecutor cite threats that she made and other bizarre behavior with her children. You know, I don't know what's going on with that, but I know that it just seems like it's a crazy, crazy case. The children are 8 and 10. They've been living with their father, Scott Hills, who's this woman, basically, and their stepmother. And she was charged with murdering Lloyd Johnson. And, of course, it was dismissed. When it was happening September 22nd, police found blood, surgical instruments, bowls of human tissue, if you remember, in the family home where Laura Johnson and her husband had been living. Of course, the prosecutors dropped the charges when an autopsy showed that he had been basically suffering from an old wound. You know, I don't know what happens when you lose a spouse, but I do know what happens when you're charged with a crime. Your whole life gets turned upside down. Your whole life turns inside out. And then when you drop the case, well, you want your life to go back to some semblance of normality, right? You want to be able to get back to your normal life. And that includes getting your kids back too, doesn't it? Well, not in this case. They basically are saying that she has such bizarre behavior that she shouldn't have the kids back. And then they're going to obviously set it up for another hearing. You call me at 248-848-1310. You think if it's okay that they should take your kids away, even though the charges were dropped. When the charges are dropped in this case. She's not accused of murder anymore. They let her out. Unless they're going to charge her again. Should her kids go back to her? You call me. 248-848-1310. Super drunk driving laws, they're here. Oh, they're in effect. You might not think they affect you. You might sit there and say, I'm not going to get a drunk driving. That's for criminals. That's for people who abuse themselves. That's for everybody else but me. Well, let me tell you something. Every time you go to a party, every time you go and you have drinks at a bar, you might not be over the legal limit, my friend. The issue is, you don't know, and you're putting yourself at risk. I'm not saying not to go drink. Heck, it's not against the law to go drink and then go drive. Not yet. It's against the law to be over the legal limit, to be intoxicated and drive, to be impaired and drive. And you think you know that every time you go to the bar and leave? Every time you come from a party, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, anything that has alcohol, you tell me that you know what your legal limit is? Well, let me tell you something. You don't. And now there's new super drunk driving laws in effect in the state of Michigan. Here's what it means. I'm not going to go through everything about it. We all know what basically drunk driving means. 0.08 or more blood alcohol level content. You know you're going to be charged with drunk driving. It's called operating while intoxicated, but it's drunk driving. Now, under the state of Michigan's new super drunk driving laws, you test on your first offense, 0.17 or greater, significant enhanced penalties. I mean significant. Way more loss of your license. Way more time losing your license. Potential loss of your car. Higher penalties, higher fines and costs. Like as if you had a second one. Do you think that's reasonable? Do you think that's what we should have? 0.17 or higher. Do you know for yourself what that means? Do you know if that means two shots and a beer? Four beers and a highball? You don't know what that means for you. Nobody really knows it means for them until they get caught and then blow or they get their blood taken. Should we even have alcohol that's legal to be sold? We don't know when we're over the legal limit. How can they legitimately be selling alcohol in bars and let you leave and you have no clue if you've had too much? Well, you might think that you're too drunk to drive and you shouldn't, but you don't really know. Unless you're going to have a handheld device, is that what we should have? Should every bar mandate that before you have another drink, you have to blow into a breathalyzer test and see how much you have in your system? Before you leave that establishment, should they mandate that everybody should blow in a breathalyzer before you get in the car? Should every car have one of those interlock devices that you blow before that car is going to start? Hey, you want to make these super drunk driving laws? You want to hold people accountable for their actions like that? You want to take away their right to work because they can't drive? You want to put them in jail? Then you know what? Give them the ability to test. Don't just give them the alcohol. Give them the ability to test. Nobody knows what 0.17 really means. They don't know if it's in their system at 0.17 or 0.12 or 0.07. I mean, come on. They're supposed to subjectively know, have they had too much? Okay, we're adults. You tell me what that point value is, unless you have a machine hooked up. You want to join this conversation. You tell me whether or not you think these are legitimate new rules. You call me at 248-848-1310 because I think it's insane. I'm not saying they shouldn't be drunk driving laws, because believe me, there should be. I'm saying that everything else is in flux. Why don't they allow us to protect ourselves then, to protect the individuals before we get in the car so they don't get killed when we drive because we had too much? Don't let the car start. I mean, heck, you have too much to drink. You are too impaired to make the choice of whether or not you should drive. You have to make the choice before you have that other drink. It's like a chicken and the egg. You should absolutely make the responsible, non-criminal choice of don't drink too much. And every person is different. Every single person. Two beers for one person, you get a teetotaling grandma, she's all over the road. You get another guy who's an alcoholic, he drinks all the time. Heck, he's over the legal limit, but he feels he's okay. I mean, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to determine what happens before we get in a car unless we make the rational choice, but we're too impaired to do it? Amir, what do you think? Do you think these are legitimate new rules?
No, I think that new rule is stupid. I don't think anything was wrong with the old one. And then to the point you said you can't get to work, you're going to shut people out. I understand about the issue of drinking and driving, so we should make it some kind of way so that people will know. Either we mandate that the car companies put them in every car. I mean, should we
why do you
that?
Think they don't? Amir, why do you think they don't mandate the auto companies to put breathalyzer machines and airlock devices in every car? Why do you think?
Well, because then that'll be, government trying to control. That's basically how people would play it, that government's trying to control. But then we're making laws where, to be honest with you, are stupid because you can't figure out if you are. Me, I don't drink, so. There's no problem.
But look about the new marijuana. You know, they let people drive now while they're under the influence, right? Just like if you're on prescribed Vicodin, you just can't be impaired by it. Well, you tell me what that means. You tell me how people are supposed to choose on their own if they're impaired by Vicodin and therefore not drive. They're impaired by marijuana. If they're impaired by alcohol, it's all subjective choices. They have to choose for themselves, and that's the hard part.
And that's the very hard part to it. And to say, I used to drink, I know drinking and being impaired, your judgment is just, it is shot.
Right.
But
here's my feeling. You know why I think they don't have the interlock devices? It's all the money, my friend. It's all the automotive companies don't want to have to spend the money to do it. They don't think, even though there's a political will, let's face it, Mothers Against Drunk Driving can be a great organization, and there's a lot of political will to mandate that people can't drive those two-ton automobiles, those two-ton pieces of steel, to go kill someone, and then put an interlock device in.
And I agree with you. You know what? To be honest with you, that wouldn't be a bad thing. But then they're going to say, well, how are you going to test people for, like you said, Vicodin and marijuana anything else?
Oh, my good. We're going to have blood tests before we go and drive to the corner store. That's insane. Is that what's going on? Well, we'll talk about that next week. It's always a pleasure every week to try to protect you, try to protect your rights. We will bring you all the local criminal news. You just stay tuned to Crime Time Live. My name's Scott Weinberg. We'll always be there to protect you. Take care.